Good morning, Waiheke. This is mostly locally with your host, Andy Durant, here on Waiheke Radio. And today, we're joined in the studio by guest Alskasana Hunt. Alskasana, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Do I have to use the full name, Alskasana? Do you shorten it to anything?
I'm afraid I don't, no.
That's full. It? It's yep. A full or nothing?
Yeah.
How very Dutch of you. And what was your maiden name? What was your Dutch name?
That was Oud, O-U-D, like cloud without the C-L.
Oud. Mm. And what does that mean?
Old.
Oh, is that right? Alskasana Old.
Yeah.
And now you're a hunter.
That's right.
That's awesome. I can see why you changed.
Yeah, I wanted something that people could spell.
I had the same thing. My name's a shocker. I've been called everything. My kids are just going through that now at school with all of the different kind of interpretations of Durant. I said to them when they were first kind of, becoming aware of this and the kind of things that can be done with it, I said, we'd get used to it, kids.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to get any better.
Yeah. Yeah, stand in good stead.
Yep. Exactly. And you'll just hear the same thing over and over and over again, a bit like listening to one of my shows, probably. Given that we are creatures of habit, I've picked a song to start the show with, which is just name association. Alskasana is a very Dutch name. Well, Alska is, and Sana is. We just found out that Alskasana together is quite unique. But I just thought, well, Dutch, what other song could there be other than this one? It's going to get louder, I promise you. Crikey, I don't know how, though. This is funny. I've got my volumes all the way up. There we go. Oh, no, here we go. Got it. Pass the Dutchie. Pass the Dutchie on the left hand side. Pass the Dutchie on the left hand side. It a go bon. Give me the music, make me jump and run. It a go done. It was the month of June. How does it feel when you got no food? So I left my gate and went out for a walk. How does it feel when you got no food? As I passed the dreadlocks camp, I heard them say, how does it feel when you got no food? Pass the dutchie on the left hand side. I said, pass the dutchie on the left hand side. It a go bon.
Give me the music, make me jump and prom.
It a go done.
Give me the music, make me look in.
Session was there in swing.
How does it feel when you got no food?
I you could feel the chill as I seen and heard them say.
How does it feel when you got no food?
Pass the dutchie on the left hand side. Pass the dutchie on the left hand side. It a go bon.
Give me the music, make me jump and prom.
It a go done.
Give me the music, make me rock in a di da. So me say listen to the drum and me say listen to the bass.
Chip on the left hand side. Pass the dutch chip on the left hand side. It a go bon.
Give me the music, make me jump and prom.
It a go done.
Give me the music, make me rock in a di da. You play it on the radio, and so me say we a go hear it on the stereo. And so me know we a go play it on the disco. And so me say we a go hear it on the stereo.
Oh. Pass the dutch chip on the left hand side.
I say,
chip on the left hand side, it a go bon.
Give me the music, make me jump and prom.
It a go done.
Give me the music, make me rock in a di da.
On the left hand side.
I say.
On the left hand side.
I say.
On the left hand side.
We need.
Past the Dutchie. Alska, you obviously have some Dutch heritage.
I do.
Your parents?
I was born there.
You were born there? And how did you find your way to New Zealand? Were you a
We were one of the last families to come on assisted passage.
Oh, when was it? Back in the...
1980. So
they were still doing assisted packages back then?
Yeah, it was the last one, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah, last round.
And how old were you?
I was six. I was almost six, yeah.
Right. Okay, so you know you must have been quite young because you got quite a Kiwi lilt.
I mean, I have.
I'm sure if it was any later than that, you'd probably have a little hangover.
Well, my brother was 10, and you can't tell that he doesn't have an accent of any sort.
At all?
At all, yeah.
And he was 10? Mm. Okay. Because I'd still find myself saying a few words like my old man, like boots. He used to say boots and boots.
Yeah.
It slips out every now and again.
Yeah, there's words that I say that I just never learnt the English word for. But
oh, really?
Some things that are just a habit probably more than anything.
Like?
I don't say biscuit, I say cookie.
Oh, right, okay. That sounded quite Dutch as well. I had that little bit of a kind of that little lilt at the end of it where you're... It's almost like the Dutch, your tongue is getting ready to launch into something impossible. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's
like, clearing your throat.
Yeah, exactly. Clearing your throat, rolling the odd R or two, and trying not to spit on the person you're talking to.
Exactly, yeah.
It's great when you see a gaggle of them together, though. I love watching my Dutch, you know, family.
Right.
My dad's kind of, it's quite funny, he's quite old, and through Skype, he's really kind of started up his relationship with his siblings, you know, that are left alive anyway. And it was really cool, but it's quite funny watching him struggle with Dutch because he'd been here for so long, he'd forgotten most of it. Mm. And he never subscribed to the Dutch clubs, never taught us Dutch, you know, all that, you know, typical staunch, I'm in New Zealand
Yeah, my parents were like that too, yeah. Yeah.
And then just seeing him, you know, then trying to have to remember the stuff at 7 years old, it's funny as hell. But good on him. Anyway, it's not about me. Debs keeps reminding me, it's about you, Elska.
Elska-sana.
Elska-sana, sorry. Oh, yes, a full version. I'm not allowed to shorten. I'm a serial shortener. I shorten everything. Expectations, self-esteem, it all gets shortened. But you came here when you were six, but your parents didn't move on to Waiheke, did they?
No, they do. They live here now, but no, they didn't. We grew up in Hawke's Bay.
Right. And what part of Hawke's Bay?
We lived in Havelock North.
Havelock North?
For a bit, and then we lived in Tiawonga on the beach for a bit.
Yeah.
And then... Yeah, back to Havelock North and then, around about. But, yeah, right. mostly in Havelock North.
And then how did you find your way onto the island then from the giddy... Well, in those days, it was pretty quite... It wasn't renowned as a wine industry back then, was it? It was
No, not so much as it is now. When I left school, I studied at Polytech and then I, you know, did the usual move around a bit, ended up in Auckland.
Yeah.
And was working for New Zealand Post and got quite... at a call centre and got quite bad RSI.
Yeah.
Long story short, doctors and physios said, you might want to find something else to do.
Yeah.
So under, following lots of thinking, I undertook a winemaking degree.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So then moved back to Hawke's Bay, studied and worked in wineries there.
Yeah.
Came back to Auckland, Adam and I had... at that point decided that we'd move to Hawke's Bay, but he wasn't getting much work down there.
Yeah.
So back to Auckland and studying correspondence and then back to Hawke's Bay where he got a job for, at the time it was ENZA's.
Yeah.
Then got taken over by Turners and Growers who decided they needed their head office in Auckland.
Right.
So had to come back again.
So how many times is that?
Two or three, I think. I lose count.
Crikey.
But last time we said we don't actually want to live in Auckland again.
Yeah,
we'd quite like the the smaller town lifestyle.
Yeah. Yep.
So we said, well, should we have a look at Waiheke then?
Yeah.
And
is that because of the wine connection, or just because it wasn't Auckland?
A bit of both. It was a case of with Adam's work, he was likely to work in the CBD.
Yeah.
Waiheke presented some winemaking opportunities for me.
Yeah.
So we thought that might be a good place to look. So we came and had a look here, drove around the island for a bit. Had a look around what was on the market and then saw something we kind of liked and went, oh, should we put in an offer? So we did.
Yeah. Well, on the same day.
Same day.
You're not the only one. It's quite amazing how many people do that.
We did that when we moved to Napier as well.
Oh, is that right? You just drove around?
Went around for a look and went, oh, okay, we'll put an offer and we'll see what happens. And
it got accepted and then you went
out. Got accepted and off we went, yeah.
What do you call if you come from Napier? Napierite? A Napierese? What would you be if you're from Napier?
I don't know. We used to always call it just the Bay.
Oh, all right.
The Bay.
Oh, of course.
But a lot of people, they associate that with Bay of Plenty.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Around Tauranga. Yeah. So it depends. I don't know.
It's a bit further south, isn't it?
It is a bit further south. Yeah, it's a bit of a hike. It's about a 5-hour drive.
It must be hard work going down to see friends and family down there. Like, you can't pop down for a weekend.
It's a bit of a mission. Not so easily, no.
Adam should get a plane.
Yeah, he should.
You should get a plane.
It's on my list to get my pilot's license.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Your bucket list? I'll ask about that, actually. That's a good one. I might include that as a regular section of the show.
Yeah.
What's the top of your bucket list? Would it be pilot?
It'd be up there.
What do you find alluring about it?
I just love it. A couple of years ago, I took my dad for his 70th, I think, on a trip around the island, a little scenic flight.
Yeah. Was that with scenic?
Yeah.
Flight
Harry. It's so cool.
It's amazing.
Everyone should do it.
Everyone should.
It's not that expensive.
It's not.
And it is so gorgeous to see the island from there. And I just thought, I want to just do that again.
Blame you. In fact, doing it yourself must be quite fun. Mm. Just going out. It's like going for a Sunday drive, but just so much more glamorous.
Yeah, and getting the license isn't that difficult. It's the actual
time.
The time and having access to a plane. That's the hard bit.
Hilton Galinsky has a Cessna, which I'm sure he'll be happy to lease out. Hilton, if you're listening, he's been on the show, Hilton. Right. Do you know Hilton?
No, I don't.
He's the South African dude, quite, you know, big, deep voice, curly hair, runs the septic tank business. Biolytics.
Yep.
He does biolytics.
Yep.
He's got a plane.
Same around.
But I put one in a silent auction bid on and won it at the Sea Scout shindig.
Yep.
And took my mother-in-law up. And it is a great experience, isn't it?
Yeah,
seeing
the
island from the air is quite different to seeing it from the ground.
It is, and it's really lovely. So since then, I've treated a few other people to that trip just because it's so it's a lovely gift.
It is a great gift,
For the person that has everything.
Take a camera. I asked him to fly over our house. He said, sure.
Yeah,
he just flew over.
He said that to us too. He said, what do you want to see? I said, oh, can we, you know, go and do a flyby?
Yeah, buzz the backyard. Can you get a bit lower?
Annoy the neighbours, yeah.
Take a few flower bombs a la Springbok tour.
Yeah.
Pick a few other addresses. Whose address was that? Oh, just somebody I know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, very good. So you came over and just on a, you know, put an offer in a house and was it accepted?
Yeah, it was. Yep.
That's brilliant. And is that where you live now?
It is where we live now. Yeah, it doesn't really look the same anymore, but, you know, it is the same.
That's funny, isn't it?
Yep.
So how people do that. And when was that? How long ago was that?
That was in 2003, late 2003.
Right, so you've been on the island now for 11 years.
Mm. Yeah, it was almost. It was, I think, just before Christmas that we actually moved in. But
okay, so you're hitting your 11th year anniversary this year.
Yeah, I'm not sure when we qualify as locals, but
you don't.
No,
you don't.
Yeah,
okay. You have to lose a digit first. You have to. You can't get in if you're not born here.
No,
you have to go. Oh, my pinky.
Yeah.
No. I have this conversation. What do you think a local? When do you think you become local?
I don't know.
I've pondered this. I think it's
it's a bit cliche, maybe, but it's it comes down to a bit of, you know, the home is where the heart is, and it's and when you find yourself becoming really protective or defensive of where you live, and you can't think of anywhere that you'd rather live,
I think you're
right. I guess it's in your own eyes, really, isn't it?
Oh, it's got to be, because you got to feel part of what you're in. If you don't feel part of it, then you're not a local, are you? You want to be somewhere else.
That's right.
I've always got that. That's the problem. I always hanker after, you know, places a bit further far flung, I suppose. I had this conversation all the time with Debs, you know, her being English.
Yeah, we do as well.
Wouldn't it be? But then, you know, you go away and you just look back and you think, crikey, you know, I just remember, you know, summer, you know, days like today where you could be down on the beach at Tangi and it would just be gorgeous down there.
Yep.
And you wonder why you'd want to be anywhere else.
And where would you go?
Well, there's nowhere like this, really, is
no,
there?
No. Not.
Do you think?
No, not in my league.
No, exactly. Martha's Vineyard, I suppose. If you had a few spare 100 million,
and that's the thing, to replace what you've got here, that's exactly what you'd need.
Yeah,
I
think it's unique. It's a shame. Actually, we come to this question later on in the show about what's the things you don't want to change. But you know, it is worth protecting this island and in all facets. I think just in the accessibility for everybody to live here.
Yes,
and the community that we have. There's everybody. And everybody lives next door to each other, and that's great. You don't get that in Auckland anymore. You can't. You don't get, you know, service industry people living in Herne Bay because they just can't afford it.
No, that's right.
And so, you know, if you live in Herne Bay, you don't know those people, and I think that's the best thing about the island.
It is, yeah.
But we'll get to that anyway. But so flying, that's on your bucket list.
Yeah.
What else is on there? You got anything else you think just off the top of your head?
It's a hard one. It's not something I really dwell on. I think I'd, in my retirement, whenever that comes about, or more to the point, when the children are of an age that they don't need us so much anymore, I'd probably like to have a motorbike again.
Why wouldn't you get one now?
Well, I just I find things like that a bit irresponsible.
Get a sidecar.
Don't use that.
It would be cool. There's a guy on the sidecar on a scooter. You've seen that dude, the orange scooter. I love that thing.
Yeah, but
you've seen his Facebook page. He's up on, you know, he's flying. Your kids would think you're the best thing in the world, going up to school in a sidecar. Go on.
They'd have to top and tail.
I've got a motorbike. Yeah. You can borrow mine if you like. I keep one in town.
I enjoyed motorbike riding, but it can be dangerous. And I think while I have, you know, young children, I think it's not right to put myself at risk like that.
Okay, that's fair enough. Even on the island?
Probably, especially on the island. And plus, there's nowhere to go.
That's true. Yeah, you can't. I saw a guy the other day with a
big
full-blown Super Sport Ducati, and you're going...
You can't open it up.
You just go up and down the straight at 11 o'clock at night, so you're not going to kill anybody.
Mm.
I don't know. Mind you, the road out the back to Oropi would be a lovely ride.
It would be a nice ride. Yeah,
the roads are good enough, I suppose. Anyway, let's go to your first track.
Yeah,
We don't pass it. Oh, this is a great track actually. Tell us why you chose "Nobody Does It Better" by Carly Simon.
I've always liked the Bond movies.
Yeah.
And it, I don't know. It's just a lovely song.
It is a lovely song.
It's a lovely song. I found it really hard choosing these songs actually. To try and find some that, you know, you can put on the top of your list and forego others and, you know, and it depends. I find very much what I like listening to depends on my mood or
the
what
day.
I'm doing.
Yeah.
If I'm trying to do housework, it needs to be something a bit more peppy.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? I think with movies, if you could say, what's your top five movies? You probably know them, you know, off the bat, you know, you go. And that list changes a little bit, but music is a lot more emotional, isn't it?
I suppose. Yeah.
But let's listen to this. Carly Simon, Nobody Does It Better. And I think, you know, this always takes me back to that opening sequence of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
that
lovely.
Bond. Yep.
Just the whole Bond thing.
Mm.
Anyway, let's play that.
Thanks. Yeah.
caught by a long fade out on that track, but that was Nobody Does a Better Colour Song. We were in the midst of movie conversation. We can't repeat that now because it's going to ruin the next track. So we won't. We won't. Oh, there, another bleed. But that's okay. That might have been a little hint if you could tell what that song was from that very
win
short
a prize. Blip.
I think you could tell, though. That's actually quite easily identified, that bit of music. So your life now on the island, you're not a winemaker?
No, that became a bit difficult with two young kids. With one, it was barely manageable, thanks to my very flexible husband and parents at the time that were, you know, cutting up the slack between daycare and, so that was okay with one child, but as soon as number two was on the way, I thought, no, that's actually not going to work.
Were you any good at it, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. People used to drink it. Well, used to helped. Get lots of lovely comments, so hopefully they weren't lying.
Well, there you go. Did you win any awards?
A couple of places.
Who gets the credit? Because I did my usual Google search of you prior to the show.
Yeah.
And found some tasting notes from Goldie, the vineyard you used to be the winemaker for. And it's, you know, so the people that get cred for the wine are obviously the viticulturalist and the...
Often it's the winemaker, which is really unfair, and I've never been one for... You know, accepting that kind of praise as an individual, because it really does take a whole team. And if the viticulturist and the vineyard team haven't done a good job, then you've got a really hard job, and you really have to work together. You've got to have an outstanding relationship with the vineyard, or it's not going to work.
Yeah, but it must have been a lovely place to work, didn't it?
It was a stunning place to work. Yeah, I've been lucky. I've worked in some lovely places. Yeah,
I love it down there. It's such a cool place, and especially now that the very generous gifting of that to the university and just that vibe down there. It's just
it's very cool.
It's very young, isn't it? It's very vibrant.
It is. Yeah, it is now. Yeah, yeah. I used to, you know, on days that you're out in the vineyard when it's like this, the pruning's all done now, but it'd be cold winter day and you look around and go, actually, you know, another day at the office, not so bad.
Not so bad, yeah. I'll go in there. We'll just hang out, have a coffee, have a chat.
Is
there much to do at this time of year as a winemaker?
At this time, at winemaking, it's like viticulture. It's all year. A lot of people, you know, look at it and go, oh, well, that's really glamorous. And, you know, you don't have to be in there very long. I remember in my early training days, I had come to know a man called Grant Edmonds, who's as far as I know, he's still the chief winemaker for Cellini in Hawke's Bay. And he, I remember him saying to me, you need to understand that winemaking is about 10% winemaking and 90% cleaning.
Oh, right.
And I went, right, good-o.
Exactly.
Thanks for that.
But they tell you at university before you got in there.
Yeah, and that's about right. It's hard work, and there's, you know, I've worked in some bigger places. I worked for Vitals for a while in Hawke's Bay as well. That's a big company, part of the Villa Maria Group.
Yeah.
So you get exposed to a lot of different stuff in a big winery. You know, long shifts. I used to know it was the weekend when Adam used to come in and bring me lunch. I thought, oh, right, Saturday or Sunday today.
Oh, is that right?
over vintage time, a couple of months.
Is that right?
The long days. Yeah, you know, you do 23, 12-hour days without a day off. And,
Holy cow.
It starts to, and then I remember the winemaker coming out and saying, I've got great news, guys. He said, I've just done the maths and we're 44% through our expected yield. And we're all like, oh
my God, not even
really?
Halfway yet.
We're not even halfway.
Wow.
But they were good times. It was a lot of fun. And it's very different to working in a small winery. You know, in a big place like that, there's a lot of cellar hands, a lot of people around, dedicated lag techs. You come to somewhere smaller like Goldie and you're essentially a one-man band.
Is it fair to say it's more feel, though, at a smaller vineyard? You've got less of the science and more of the instinctive elements?
Typically you have less access to, you know, the high-tech.
Yeah.
High-tech stuff, so you've got to you have to send samples away for testing that you can't do yourself.
But how did they make wine before they did those tests?
They just
made worse wine?
It was probably, no, I don't know if it was worse wine. It was possibly less consistent, maybe.
Okay.
Where you perhaps couldn't identify something that you maybe could have quite easily corrected for, I don't know. I don't know if it was less lesser in quality. I've never been a big fan of big interference. I don't know if it means I'm a bit lazy, but I always think the less you do to it, the better.
Yeah.
It's a case of if you're trying to correct for something acid or tannin or coloured or something, you fiddle with that, and then something else comes out of balance.
Yeah.
So then you've got to fiddle with that, and then that's out of, and then on and on it goes, and in the end you've
You've tweaked it out the door.
Yeah. So I've always subscribed to, you know, the less you do it, the more it will reflect where it's come from.
So does that, I suppose that must put a lot of emphasis on the quality prior
absolutely.
To actually having the barrels. Yep.
And that's the thing, you know, in a small place like Goldie, you have more freedom to do that in a way because everything's hand-picked, hand-pruned, you know.
You've got to love that, though, surely. It's a great way of
it is.
Creating a product.
It's awesome, yeah. And you know, you get it all into barrel and you'll see differences between barrels and you have your favourite barrels. And
that's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Do you bottle it that way, though? Wouldn't it be good if you
can't, unfortunately. You have to – it's a big process of, well, you can't – well, you could, but it's – not that viable.
Right.
So you do...
Well, I suppose it's not because you're trying to market a product and then you can't do that by
and
barrel.
And this is the thing. You've got to put your different hat on. You've got your winemaker's hat where you're going, well, that one's really yummy. I don't want to mix it with those other ones.
But you end up going, so does it all get blended at the end of it?
Well,
you
not all... Yeah, you spend a lot of time doing blending trials.
Could you sell... But could I buy a barrel? Could I just go to you and go, what's your best barrel? I want that barrel. Could I do that? Could I walk up and go, give me your best barrel?
Well, Goldie? I don't know. You could try. But the other thing too is that you often will need different barrels together to make, you know, the sum of the parts is
greater than the... Yeah, okay.
That whole thing.
So is that what you're doing? You're testing each barrel?
You do.
Going, all
yep.
right,
so you take samples of this and then you work out,
so you're actually,
we need a bit of that, a bit
and
of this.
You're looking down the track going, yep. the blended, I can see what the finished product's going to be.
Exactly. And, and you're looking at that all the time. You're constantly checking the barrels.
And how do you keep notes? How do you keep track of it?
You just have to record it all.
Does it stay in your head?
Stays in your head too. It can stay in your head somewhere like Goldie, but even in a bigger place like at Vitals, you'll get parcels. They're called parcels.
Okay.
Parcels of fruit that you keep. And you keep things separate. Well, I used to keep things separate for as long as you can because once you've mixed it, you can't undo it.
Yeah.
You know, so you keep it separate as long as you can, and then right at the end when you've done all your trials, you've gotten all your mates, all the crew to come and test it. Everyone's kind of thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Only at that point do you stick it together.
Have you ever been really drunk when you've done that?
No.
Like you taste each barrel, you go, right, now it's time to mix it. This should
look
great.
Let's go, yeah.
It's one of those dodgy cocktails. It's quite funny. As it came up in a Facebook thread the other day, somebody reminded me of this cocktail we used to drink called a Wogan, which is named after a guy called Peter Wogan, who heralds from the Hawke's Bay, as it happens. But somebody reminded me that of this Wogan, and it was the most atrocious thing you've ever drunk. So I'm assuming it's pretty dangerous.
Mm. No, I have to say I've never done that. Blending is probably one of the most nerve-wracking times.
Yeah.
Largely.
Oh, is that right?
I used to think so. Yeah. Because once you've done that, you can't undo it.
Yeah.
Once that's that, you've reached the point of no return.
How many bottles in a barrel?
Barrel, typically what we use in New Zealand are called barriques. They hold, depending if it's French or American, 225 litres, which will get you somewhere around 300 bottles.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
Once you put it there, okay.
Yeah. And that's if you're using barrels. Not everything goes to barrel. Not everything is improved by going to barrel, but barrels are expensive. They cost around, I don't know what they are now, but probably don't get much change out of $2,000.
What, for the actual... Per barrel,
and you can use that. I mean, you can use it as a storage vessel for quite a while, but to get any oak character out of it, you've got probably
two, three years
at a push.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so it's big bucks. It's big money. Yep.
$2,000. Is that because of the cost of the oak?
It's a specialised craft. It's the oak. It's the way that
they don't do machines anymore.
I suspect they're
large. Coopering, isn't it?
Coopering. Yep. That's right. Yeah,
oh, I didn't.
But
no
they're
idea.
All dry. They're all toasted. They all have to, you know.
And the Chinese making cheaper.
I don't know that they That's can. Weird. I don't know that they grow oak. And if you've got to grow
Chinese
oak. I don't know.
It's actually pine.
I suspect it's happening.
It's actually pine.
Yeah, it's actually pine. They just put a wee varnish or something on it. Yeah. No, I don't know.
Yeah, infuse it with oak flavors. Mm. Awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't do that anymore.
So how long do you study though to do that?
It's a 3-year applied science degree.
Crikey. So did you have a degree prior to that?
I didn't. No, I had a diploma in business studies. When I decided that I was going to do winemaking, I found out what I needed to do, and that included that I needed bursary chemistry. I don't know what they call it now. Some NCEA level.
Yeah.
to as a pre-approval for that. So I spent a year doing bursary. Chemistry via the correspondence school, which was very cool. They sent me this great big box, my science kit. I don't know that you get it through the post these days. Chemicals, Bunsen burner, test tubes, all came in a big box. Used to set
That's
up.
Choice.
It was really cool.
I might just do that anyway.
I said,
is it a cheap way of getting a good chemistry set?
I suppose so.
Get one for the kids.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd get, you know, I'd get these projects sent and I'd have to mix it all up. And I mean, it's obviously nothing really dangerous because people are doing it in their homes. But
Oh, yeah, but you don't, you know, you just need a recipe, isn't it? Chemistry is just
essentially,
recipes.
Essentially, yeah, and observation.
So you can find dangerous shit anywhere.
You can.
Bit of fertilizer, bit of sugar.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Throw a bit of bleach in on your way.
Not recommending that to anybody. Try that at home.
No, no. So that was good fun. So it was a bit of preparation that I had to do before I got there. So I did that.
But how did you come to the conclusion that it was you wanted to be a winemaker?
Oh, it was a long road. It was a long road. Because when someone says you need to do something else, you go, oh, right, okay. Yeah. What shall I do? And then you start to think, okay, well, here's an opportunity. Because I think a lot of us fall into jobs or careers and that just sort of by accident a lot. Yeah. You know, you might end up somewhere and then you sort of evolve. You might move through the company and stay in that kind of vein. So to be given the opportunity to think, what do I really want to do? I found quite challenging. It was a case of, well, what am I interested in? And you go through all your interests, things that you like the look of, or like the sound of. And then you follow all those things through and you think, yeah, I quite like that. But actually, could I really do that for a job? Would I really want to do that 40 hours a week for the rest, you know, for however many years?
But in some ways, though, it was quite lucky that did happen.
Because yeah, it was. It was great.
How many of us actually do that?
Exactly. That was the thing. So that was why I thought, okay, here's my chance to really think about what I want to do.
You don't know at school, do you?
No, you don't. Of course you don't.
Did you get any career advice at school?
Oh, they have careers advisors.
They go, Elskasana, you should really consider... Because if you listen to John Key, it's, these are the careers that make money. They're the degrees you should get. They make money. There's nothing,
Not like that. And so you're right. I mean, there was careers advisors. We went to, they had some big thing on at the showgrounds, a big, fair thing where you go and collect lots of brochures about all sorts of different things. You go, oh, that looks like fun. This looks like fun. Yeah. And then you think, yeah, okay, that is fun. But am I good enough to do that?
Yeah.
Am I good enough to earn a crust? Do I want to do it? Is that something that I have enough of an interest in to take seriously?
Was it hard to walk away from that? Was all the work you put into it?
With winemaking?
Yeah.
Are
you going to go back to it?
I don't know. I've really enjoyed it. I still, when I talk to people about it, I sometimes think, oh, actually, I quite miss it.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things that was a really interesting and rewarding part of my life from a work experience. It's not terribly lucrative, it's good fun.
It's got good street cred, though, isn't it?
This is the thing. People think it's this really amazing, glamorous job. They don't realise that you spend a good portion of your time with your arm down a drain trying to unblock it.
Could be worse. You could be a vet. Spend your time with your arm up a cow's bum.
I don't know. I fished out a few trolls from the drain.
But really?
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't look too closely, but yeah.
Oh, no. Any rats in the vat?
Oh, you get birds. You don't
do that scrumpy thing, do you? Do you know how that scrumpy, they suggest that they replace the dead rat?
They freshen it up. No, you don't purposely do that.
They put raw mints in scrumpy in England. Did you know that?
No, I didn't, but it wouldn't surprise me. When you hand process things, you don't get that so much. But invite the most odd thing I've ever seen go into a big hopper is a couple of bicycles, where the machine harvester he'd had his kids out riding their bikes in the vineyard while he was working, threw the bikes on top of the grapes when they were driving the truck.
Forgot
they were there. He backs up to this, it's a 15-ton hopper thing. He backs the trap up, tips it up, and then go these bicycles.
Oh, no.
Which is a bit interesting. So you shut it all down, you fish them out. But you get birds' nests and, rats and mice and, they'll turn up. But they work their way out, so it's not a big deal.
That's the best thing about alcohol, isn't it? Nothing lives in it. So even if they are in there, nothing bad can survive. It all gets drunk and drowns.
Really, if anything can survive, going through the hopper, then through the crusher, then into the press, really you've got to let it live, I think.
Yeah.
You've got to give it. It's
give it a chance.
Give it a chance.
Try hard to get there.
Mm.
Let's listen to your next track. This is Club to Death, which is a track from The Matrix. What made you pick this? Are you Trinity? Do you harbour any Trinity kind of bullet time?
No, I don't think so. No.
No?
It's a great song, and I'm not sure whether it was Adam, my husband, or possibly his brother that was stayed with us for a couple of months at the time, and it somehow ended up into our a CD in our car, which at the time we had a nice WRX, and I used to drive to a winery in West Auckland, Henderson, Solgens. Oh, okay. They're in Kumu now, but they were in Henderson then.
I know them.
And so I used to get the commute out west, and Adam used to get the bus into town, and so it was a bit of a drive, and I have fond memories of listening to this long song very loud.
Going down the Northwestern Motorway.
Going down the Northwestern Motorway.
And your WRX.
And my WRX.
Did you have a big exhaust pipe on it?
Yeah.
Nice. Wicked.
Yeah.
Everybody's a bit of a Westie when they work out West.
Yeah. Hey? If you can't beat them, join them.
Well, hey, why not, is what I say. Yeah. I'm from the West. I'm a very soft spot for the West. But here's the Matrix theme track. Well, I think it was the actual main theme track, but also comes in a bit later on. I was watching the movie last night. It was a great scene when this comes in. That was The Mate We Got Caught Chatting Again. That was The Matrix Club to Death. Great movie, by the way. I watched a little bit of it last night and it was nice to be reminded of what a good movie it is. And conceptually, it's great. I got a couple of favourite quotes from it. What you're going to do? I'm going to do my Mr. Agent Smith impersonations here. First one is, you're a virus. I love that. You're a virus. And the other one is, do you hear that, Mr. Anderson? That is the sound of inevitability. You know when he's got him on the railway tracks? He's got, I love it. Anyway, so you've kind of followed a theme, though, with your career, because you are also the wonderful purveyor of roast waiheke. And you roast coffee beans now.
I do, yep.
Tell us a bit about that. I was doing, it's probably not a huge leap from winemaking.
No. That opportunity presented itself actually first when I was at Goldwater. Jason and Christine Schwartz used to have Nourish Cafe, which a lot of people might remember. Hopefully they do. It was a great place.
Yep.
And Jason used to roast the coffee there for Nourish and a few other places. They changed paths. They had Cortado, and then after that they came to Goldie, I think is the right order. And at that time he said, I was working part-time then, I think. I had my eldest daughter Riley was already on the scene then. And he said, I'm looking at selling this business. Do you think that you'd be interested in coffee roasting? I think you'd be really good with your winemaking background, your sciencey skills. I said, I don't know, I never thought about it, let me ever think about that. He said, I've got someone else that's interested, but if that doesn't come to pass, would you be interested? So I went away, I did a bit of research, as I want to do, and came back and said, yeah, actually, I think I'm keen. He goes, stink, I've just, you know, the other one's come through and I've sold it. So that was the end of that. Then a couple of years later, I think Stu...
Halstead,
yep, that's the one. He bought the business, and I think Jason had said, look, if you ever had enough, you want to sell it, would you let me know? And that was what happened. So Stu got in touch with Jason, said, look, you know, my world's changing. I'm thinking of passing this on. So then Jason got in touch with me, and I went through that whole thing again, and off we went with a...
And you got a coffee roaster in your house now.
And I've now got a coffee roaster, yeah.
In your house?
It's in our house,
That's a choice, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. I was up there the other day. Adam helped me get the right grind for my presso.
Yeah, and the grind is all, it's all about the grind. Well, it's all about being it fresh and getting the grind right.
Well, the fresh is absolutely right.
Makes a huge difference.
It does, and I have to say it's the best. I'm not just that you sponsor the station or anything else, but... you certainly taste the difference, and you certainly get a much better product at home if it's as fresh as it possibly can be.
It's the old adage of, you know, like with anything you make to put in your body, fresh is best.
Yeah. And why would you, the stuff in the supermarket shelf has all been sitting there.
It's all foil packed. You don't really, I mean, it will have dates on it. But, you know, we try and stay away from the foil packs for a number of reasons. We're conscious of our footprint. So we try and avoid that.
So nice brown paper bags.
Yep,
they're very good if you suffer from anxiety too, I'd imagine. They're perfect for that breathing thing, don't you?
That's right.
Yeah. Just the right size.
Pump yourself up on the coffee and then need the bag. Yeah,
exactly. I've had 14 coffees this morning.
But I've got my brown paper bag, yeah. I was looking at the bags the other day because we just, you know, like you say, it's just a brown a bag with a stamp on it, which will let you know what you've got. And I thought, I could glam it up. And then I thought, no, because that would be, you know, that I'd need to put some kind of sticker on or, you know, that involves colour. And really, we just throw it away. And I'm not a big fan of that. So we think, no, we'd rather focus on what's in the bag rather than the bag.
Well, it's funny now, though, isn't it? All those old school branding exercises are taking place. You know, even the home brand cereals are starting to do it more because we all feel better. We feel more wholesome, don't we? Mm. But having said that, I mean, theirs is probably a bad example. Yours is great because it is a truly fresh product. You get the beans, where do you get those from?
They come from Papua New Guinea. We source them through a wholesaler in Auckland, and they source them from a farmer's co-op in Papua New Guinea. And we like to support the fair trade organic.
Yep.
So we like to, you know, that's probably as close.
Have you been there to visit the...
No, I've thought about that. Probably not the ideal family holiday destination.
No, exactly. A bit dodgy. Papua New Guinean Highlands. But wonderfully kind of dodgy though, isn't it?
Yes.
Like, there's still places in this world that are so kind of, you could get taken by a tribe. That's cool.
Yeah, it sounds kind of cool, but I don't know about that reality. I think I might think that was not so cool if it ever, you know.
Oh, if it happened to you? Yeah, but it's their manor, right? You're on their turf.
Exactly. So that's right. So that you go there with that, you know, with that in mind. I would love to go and see where the coffee comes from, see, you know, how they process it, and all that kind of thing. But, yeah, I don't know. That might be on my bucket list, but...
Motorbike flying.
If I survive the motorbike, then I'll take.
You could fly there. You can fly yourself there.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah, could.
That's the way to do it.
That's right.
And so, is there much science behind it? Deb's Prime Me, which you knew that we're thinking about getting you on the show.
Yeah.
The stethoscope. What's that all about?
Oh well, that's just because that's just me. So the thing with coffee is that you if you imagine a coffee roaster. And I had to laugh a little bit because of my winemaking background. There's quite a lot of machinery. You know, it's not – when I say everything's hand done, it's not.
Yep.
You know, there's big grunty crushers that have big paddles and things that'll take your arm off. And,
and
it happens. And, you know, so I remember Stu saying, oh, you know, it's a machine and this and that. And I was like, yep, okay. But I guess because of that, I wasn't afraid of the machine.
Yep.
And compared to winemaking machinery, it's a relatively tame piece of equipment. It's essentially a big drum with an auger thing that goes around that keeps the beans moving while they're being roasted.
Yep.
You fire up the roaster, you get it going nice and hot. The beans go in and they start to cook. Now, the beans, when they're green, they're quite small and quite waxy. They have quite a lot of moisture in them.
What do they taste like? Can you eat them raw?
No, they're tough as old. No, they're not good.
Right.
And they stink.
They stink.
Oh, no, they don't stink, but they don't smell very nice.
Right. I think that qualifies as stinking.
I mean, if you have to get quite up close to them to really smell it. Yeah, okay. So it's not like you walk into a room of green beans and you run away or anything like that.
Do they come in those big sacks, really?
They do come in big sacks,
That's cool, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, I recycle them. Rob, one of the local honey guys, he uses the bags. He uses them for smoking or something like that. So.
Oh, is that right? Right, he smokes the bags.
No, he's crazy. He smokes the bag. That's why he
people will smoke anything on silent.
That's right. to calm the bees, I think, is what happens. But So that's nice. We like to be able to recycle and do, you know, because essentially that's a waste product for me. So the beans go in, and they're quite small and green, and they as they warm up, they become it changes from an endothermic reaction to an exothermic, which means they go from taking on heat to releasing heat.
Right. So it's a bit like charcoaling.
Probably.
Yeah, okay.
I would say so. Yep. So while that's going on, you have to fiddle with the heat because you want to keep the temperature constant.
Yeah.
So at first, you know, that's just putting in heat, but then as the beans warm up and start to expand, they start to generate heat. So then you have to, you know, fiddle with that. So it's a little bit sciencey.
Yeah.
Not too complicated.
But is that like done with a dial?
It's just a temperature gauge.
You manually watch
and then
it.
Yep, you manually watch the temperature gauge.
So it's not a computer controlled thing. Where I set
No, the fancy new ones are all hot air driven. They're completely automated and
boring.
And boring, yep. But, you know, very consistent, which, you know, the big places, I guess, need to do. Yeah, so you're controlling the gas essentially like you would on your hob, on your gas hot.
So it's gas fired, this thing?
It's gas fired, yeah.
It looks pretty cool. I like the paddly bits that cool the beans after you tip them out.
Yeah, you don't want to get your hand in there, though.
No, I'm sure, but it looks like a contraption. And I like stuff that looks like it should be out of I was having this conversation with Brendan Mooney at the coffee thing.
Yep,
he's got this idea of, getting kind of gothic on his coffee cart, which I think is a great idea.
Yeah.
But he wants to call it, you know, Madame Tourette's Coffee Emporium. Yes. They swear by their coffee.
Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, I love it.
Or something similar, but he was talking about taking the cover off his coffee machine to expose the inner workings and adding a few other contraptions to it to make it look very kind of 1800s.
Yep.
But I like that paddle thing that spins around that pulls the beans.
Well, it's essentially an auger, and that's what's inside the roaster as well that keeps the beans moving. So then they heat up, and then they crack like popcorn.
Yep.
And the process is a first crack and a second crack. First crack is quite loud.
Yep.
Second crack comes a few minutes later, not so loud.
Is that when you get that little split in them? Is that where the little split comes from?
Yep, so where the little split comes in. They essentially pop like popcorn. So you hear the first one, then you'll hear a lot of popping, and then it will lull a bit, and then you'll get a second crack. And that's quite quiet, and that's where I need my stethoscope.
So you're listening to that for that second.
I'm listening for that second crack.
So you must be hearing the machine whirring around in your head.
Yeah. So there's noise. There's the machine going around.
I just got this picture of you with your eyes closed, with the stethoscope on the next to the machine, with your hand on the dial, ready to shut the thing down. It's very McCoy, isn't it?
It is very McCoy.
Star Trek kind of. Give it all she's got, Captain. Are they popped yet? I don't know. I didn't know.
That's right. I have to reconfigure the main deflector, yeah.
Oh, you know the words.
I do.
Do you reconfigure the main deflector on your coffee machine?
Sometimes.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we won't talk about greasing the nipples, but yeah.
No, we don't do that. It's a family show.
No, but it needs a bit of love now and then. And
I'm assuming it's not
a complicated machine, really. It's fairly straightforward.
It's just a contraption.
It is a contraption. It's a nice looking contraption. It's much prettier than winery machines. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of contained. It's got a very compact area that you can work in.
Yeah. Well, it's only a small roaster. It's only a 10 kilo roaster. And the thing with it's a bit similar. There's some similarities to winemaking. And winemaking, when you put wine in a barrel, over time it evaporates through the oak.
Yep.
And that always, you know, so you have to top up the barrels. You have to go in every week.
What's that called? The angel something?
Angel share.
Yeah.
Mm. And coffee does the same thing. You put 10 kilos in of green beans and you'll get out something like 8 kilos.
Okay.
Because you lose the rest to moisture and the chafe that comes out through the chimney and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
does it smell nice when you do it?
It smells like toast.
That's quite nice.
Yeah, it smells like slightly burnt toast.
Oh, that's not so bad. Your neighbours like the idea of it. Do they smell it? Do they know, there's a roast on?
Yeah.
That's cool. And how often do you roast a week?
Typically once, sometimes twice. Depends on what's going on.
So your output, how many kilos, typical weekly output?
Probably about 30 kilos.
Crikey.
Yep. So not heaps. We're only small.
Yeah.
Which is how I like it for now. I could do with a little bit more capacity, but you know, it needs to be. The whole point of it was that it was a manageable exercise with life in general.
But I suppose I suppose production goes up. But I like the fact that it's from a product of production perspective. Mm. It's done with love, isn't it? Because it's not big batch. It's not computerized. There's an art and a craft to it.
And you've got to fiddle with it. I mean, you do have to just keep an eye on it. Really, you just have to pay attention.
Yeah.
And I mean, one of the first Tony Soldrin actually at Soldrin's Winery where I first worked. He used to wander around and he'd say, attention to detail. You know, winemaking, that's what you've got to do, attention to detail. Notice when something's different, when something's changed.
Yeah.
Pay attention.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing. You know, you're listening for it, you're looking at it. So while it's roasting, you know, over time, I know that at roughly 10 minutes, the beans will be the colour of sort of toasted peanuts.
Do you nip out for a coffee while it's happening though, or do you stay there with the machine?
No, I stay with the machine.
Do you allowed to drink coffee? Unlike winemaking, are you allowed to drink coffee while you're doing it?
Perhaps not too much. Yeah, yeah, you can. I mean, it's a roast takes for me anywhere from about 20 to 25 minutes,
start to finish.
Typically, I do consecutive batches because once you've fired the machine up, you've got it warmed up. It's a bit like making pancakes.
Better with a hot pan.
Yeah.
Well, being Dutch, you'd know about your pannekoeks.
Pannekoeken, yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Well, it actually comes back to your ode, right?
Yep.
You know the Dutch, sorry.
Yeah.
You can tell my dad never taught me Dutch. But it was quite funny, the variety of names from the Dutch, isn't there? Because can you validate the story for me? I heard that. They never used to have surnames, and at one point they were forced through a census to put a surname down. So a whole load of them chose silly names like Van der Pauw and Van Pannekoek, which is, you know,
Van Pannekoek.
No, there is
of the pancake
and Van der Pauw, which is of the peacock. My brother's
this
is So it's.
I don't know about that. No, I'm sorry, I can't validate that.
Right, I'll have to Google it.
It'd be a good little research project.
Indeed. Mm. Well, I can only do short ones. I don't have the attention to detail that you might have to study something like that. So, but is it? It's quite a rewarding thing, I think, having those little island.
It is. I've always enjoyed it. Was what I enjoyed with winemaking as well, is that, you know, it takes however long what you're making takes, but there's something very rewarding about having a tangible product at the end of it. Do you know what I mean? Whether it's bottles of wine all neatly stacked up on pallets and boxes ready to be going wherever, or whether it's, you know, bags of coffee waiting to be delivered. There's something nice about that. It's a real start and finish.
You're creating something, and it's not negative. People appreciate it.
Not everyone will like what you're doing. I used to find that with winemaking, people, you know, they have these expectations that all you drink is really fancy stuff or this or that. And I always used to say, well, no, actually, you should drink what you like.
Everyone's an expert.
And if what you like is a bargain, then all the better for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Really.
Cheap.
It's just unfortunate for you if you only like stuff that costs you an arm and a leg.
I guess. But like anything, you know, if you're a snob, you're passing up on hidden gems that would be great. And
this is right.
There's no such thing
you
as...
You just need to keep an open mind and you just try... I always just think, just try different things. It's the same approach we take with the kids with anything new. It's like you don't have to like it, but you've got to give it a go.
Yeah.
And then you can't really pass judgment. And same with winemaking. I never took offence if people didn't like a variety or a style or, you know, we're all individuals and things that we put, you know, that we eat and drink are very personal.
And same
with the coffee. Some, you know, a lot of people love it. Some people prefer a different style or a different bean. No worries.
I'm a convert, I have to say. I love it. I think it's a great product. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
For providing us islanders with such good... activity juice.
Yeah,
I haven't had enough this morning. I've only had two. I need a third. Yeah. I think we're approaching time. It's flying by, Elskasana. Oh, you did the whole lot.
Look at that.
I normally have the quick fire question round, which we haven't had a chance to do, which is a real shame. But I'll ask you a couple of questions.
Sure.
What'd you have for breakfast? Coffee.
Coffee. Yeah, always start the day with coffee. And power cuts the other day. Problem. Couldn't use my coffee machine.
That's why espressos, mate.
I know, but I didn't have. I could make coffee, but I didn't have any ground beans. I nearly got the pestle and mortar out to grind some beans.
That would work, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't know.
Well, you could just eat a handful of them.
Well, I do that anyway. People always like, "Do you eat the beans?" Like, oh yeah.
I suppose it's sampling, isn't it? The finished product.
Yeah.
That's why I always wondered if you sampled the product beginning. I suppose, but anything else with the coffee, or is it just strictly coffee for you in the morning?
Usually Weet-Bix.
Weet-Bix.
Yeah, except on the weekends, Adam makes
hot milk, cold milk.
Oh, depends on the weather. Usually just cold milk.
How do you stack them? Do you stack them up? How many in a plate?
Crush them up, two.
You crush them?
Yeah.
Before you put the milk on?
Yeah.
Wow.
Time is of the essence.
But you can, but you know, you're not a squelcher.
No.
You like them squelchy?
No.
I'm amazed. My brother used to eat huge amounts of Weet-Bix, but he always had this specific way of stacking them, two and then one on the top. And then he'd trim the side of that one, flip that one over, eat the mulch. Because what he'd have is he'd have a combination of really splodgy and quite crispy, and he liked that whole... But then he would do that for about four bowls. Mind you, he's about 6'20". And he also drank. We went through 8 pints of milk a day in those days. Crikey. He was a tall boy. We've gone through that. We've done that one. What's the name of your favourite pet?
The name of my favourite pet? We had a cat called Shmoo.
Shmoo?
Yeah. Shmoo was lovely.
Right. And what happened to Shmoo?
Shmoo...
But the big one?
She did. She got sick. And we always said she was about 15. And
oh, that's old.
That's old. Yep, that's not bad. And we always said, you know, she's had a good life. And we'd taken her to the vet. She had something wrong with her thyroid with this, that. And then they said, oh, you could medicate. And I said, actually, no. So she was all right. And she just got a bit skinny. And then she just, she wasn't well. And so we had to. So she's under the plum tree now.
Nice. Shmoo.
Shmoo.
Good plums?
Grey and white. Awesome plums.
There you go. Every time you have a plum, you think Shmoo.
Yep.
That's a nice way to do it.
Yep.
Good way of passage. Good passage, isn't it?
Yeah.
Quite like that. I like this whole concept of death and indigenous people because we hide from it, don't we, in the West? Death is scary.
Yeah.
But indigenous people do like welcome it and they, you know, like I had Hemi on and talked to him a bit about it, you know, the whole way the Maori, you know, just really kind of, you know, grieve properly.
Yeah.
And it becomes part of the process and the passage and you understand it. Us honkies, we're crap at death.
Yeah.
We should get better.
Well,
not just yet.
Yeah.
Not just yet. Maybe a bit later.
We make it complicated, don't we?
Do you have a nickname? Not if you're. Are people allowed to give you one? No?
No.
Did you ever have one at school, though?
I had one when I worked at Vitals, actually. I had this. My bananas used to always get squashed in my bag, and so I bought this lunchbox. It's funny. Not funny. Well, I don't know. And it was a dinky lunchbox. It was bright green. It had this big sticker of these little picnicking bears. It was a dinky's lunchbox.
Nice.
And one of the senior cellar hands there, he started calling me Dinky. So for my time at Vitals, I was Dinky.
Dinky the winemaker.
Dinky the winemaker. Yeah,
that's a good name.
Yeah, I spent most of my time at Vitals as a cellar hand there. Cellar rats, they call them.
Right.
Yeah.
Dinky the Cellarer.
Yeah, so that stayed with me for a bit through my studies at EIT as well, because, of course, there was overlap there from people I worked with.
People in the know. Mm. What was the best advice your mum gave you?
Oh.
Dutch mother. Must have been full of it. Yeah. Must have had a lot of advice.
She's a good lady.
She wasn't your archetypal bossy Dutch lady, was she?
No. She might be listening. She lives on the island.
Cool.
Yeah.
Was she a queue jumper, though?
No.
You get two different types of Dutchies. There's the nice Dutchies, and then there's the queue jumping Dutchies.
Oh, no, she's not a queue jumper.
Oh, that's good.
No, not at all. I don't know. She's always giving me good advice.
Nothing springs to mind. I bet your mum's sitting there right now going, but I told you.
I always told you that. Yeah. And she probably is. And she does. And she probably did.
Well, she must have done a good job, though, because, I mean, you've reinvented yourself a couple of times, and it's good, isn't it?
I guess one of the things that she always sort of did, make a point of, perhaps now with the kids as well, is that, you know, if kids are happy playing, whether it be with a big bucket of soapy water that's making a huge mess and they're having fun, just leave them to it, because, you know, it'll take you 5 minutes to clean it up, and they're happy as Larry for an hour or whatever it is that they're in, you know.
That's good advice.
That
is good advice. You forget sometimes, don't you?
Yeah, I think often we think, oh, that's just making a mess or that's being a pain, but actually it's not that bad, because, you know, once it's all done, it'll take you a few minutes to...
Have a coffee, put your headphones on.
Exactly.
Pretend they're not there.
Yeah, and then it'll take you 5 minutes to clean it up, and they're happy, you alone.
Tell you what, I'm going to take that advice from you. What's your mum's name,
by the way? Marijke.
Marijke, that's a good Dutch name as well.
Yeah, you can find... You see her, if you go to the market, she's inside selling lots of beautiful cards.
Oh, okay, Yeah, I don't. I never get inside often enough at the market.
No, a lot of people don't. But yeah,
I do loiter around the food stalls. Yeah, as you can probably tell. So follow my heart.
Yeah,
Elsie, it's been great having you on the show. Thank you very much for coming on.
Been a pleasure.
I'm sorry we haven't got through nearly enough of your music.
Oh, that's okay.
We're going to play a couple to go out on. We'll probably play the Boxer as we go out, actually, because that's a good old classic. Simon and Garfunkel. Last question.
Yes.
Having lived on the island now for 11 years, you've probably seen a few things change and a few things that... What's something that you really don't want to see change? What's something you'd love to keep about the island?
I guess something that's probably quite a common one. I quite like the fact that we just have, standalone shops.
Yeah.
I think that's really good for the kids, for the children on the island, that they're not exposed to that really big commercial chain stuff that we actually really don't need.
The Westfield experience. You can go into any Westfield around New Zealand, and you just go, there's the same shop, there's the same shop.
Yeah, and we don't need it. And I quite like the fact that they don't start out their lives with that around them. It will come, you know, they'll get exposed to it soon enough. But in the meantime, we don't need it.
But I tell you, it's quite interesting. My kids, for the first time, I take the kids football over, and the kids have just taken to having sushi instead of McDonald's. Mm. You know, they know now that, you know, it's just not
a good choice.
It's not a good choice. And then Bert said the other day, he's going, oh, can I just have a McDonald's? Because I haven't had it for ages. And you know what? I just want some nuggets. And I went, oh, all right, I'll forget the ammonium, whatever it is they use to process the meat. And sure, there's your break. But that was quite nice. Rather than being in the, you know, prior to that was always like, McDonald's, I want a McDonald's.
And that's fair enough. We all have those hankerings now and then.
Yeah. I suppose the diversity of the shops and the fact that it is still like a village.
Yep.
Yeah, that's nice. And what's something you would, you'd like to see change?
The big one that springs to mind at the moment, partly because of my entire family's involvement with the Kaleidoscope show that's on at the moment called Kinder, is the Artworks complex. We've got this fantastic, lovely new library, but unfortunately that really highlights the shambles that is Artworks.
It wasn't well built.
It's an absolute death trap. It's just shocking. And we've talked about this.
Don't say death trap. There's kids in there performing. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Touch wood.
Yeah. And we've talked about this in our household. And what we've decided is that what would be really cool is a big complex down at Maitiatia, where it's lovely and pretty, and people could come on the ferry for shows and have a big outside thing, make it a whole thing.
Well, there's something already there that could be used quite happily.
That's right. Yeah, it's a great space. It never seems to...
Well, commercially, I suppose. It's just never been done properly.
No, but
also, it's tapu land too, man. Remember that. There's a lot of people that quite firmly believe that place was never kind of
meant to be anything. Yeah. Okay, well, but that's a big, it's a big area down there. But I think it would, I'd like to see something like that incorporated some kind of activity centre for sort of early teenagers where there's not a lot
that's desperately needed,
where they've got you know, they're old enough to have the independence, but there's nothing there for them.
Yeah.
Or, you know, not that I'm aware of.
Oh, you're right. No, when it's not being used, you could easily have them, you know, being their own DJs and having more stuff to do like that.
Mm.
Having said that, that's going to be a challenge for us as our kids get older.
It is. We're not quite there, actually,
good idea. It's time to do it now because
it'll be ready by the time they get ready, yeah.
Well, you never know. Yeah. Council.
Maybe. Yeah.
Council.
Yeah. Anywho. But that's one thing that springs to mind would be that it would be, you know, and keep this Oneiroa site for more, perhaps more, you know, commercially business stuff.
Put a swimming pool there.
Yeah. yeah, we won't go down that track.
Are you pro or do you think the swimming pool's feasible?
I don't know.
It's an unfair question.
Over summer, my mum and I were down at the school pool 3-4 times a week for adult swimming.
Yeah.
When the pool was open. And often there were times when it was just us.
Yeah.
There. So
who was using it? Yeah.
And it was open to the public. It was open for everyone. You did have to pay, but it wasn't a lot. And you could do adult lane swimming there. The pool's solar heater was lovely and warm.
Yeah.
And there was hardly anyone there. And at the same time, there's all these letters to the paper saying, "Where's our pool? We need a pool. We need somewhere to go."
And there's one there.
And there's one there not being used. So I don't know. I mean, I love swimming. I really think it's valuable for children in New Zealand in general, especially on Waiheke, to know how to swim and be water safe.
Yeah.
It's a great sport. It's a great activity. But I don't know. We're such a small community. How on earth are we going to fund something like that?
Now, I suppose the question I always had in my head was, how many other 8,500 strong communities around New Zealand have their own pool?
Indoor heated, and the costs of running such a facility are enormous.
Anywho, it's contentious because there's a lot of people out there that want it, and that's fair enough.
I want it too, but if it's viable, great.
But aren't we lucky with our new library?
It is amazing. Cool is it is so cool.
And that space around the back.
Yep.
I reckon artwork, because there is budget to resolve the issues with artworks, whether or not they just knock it down and start again or whatever they do.
I think probably that's really what it needs, yeah.
Seeing some of that live music that's been going on lately in there, and the fact that you know, it seems to be getting a nice resurgence here on the island. Bring it on.
Yep.
Anywho, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Elska Sana, it's been lovely having you on the show. Excellent. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you much.
Hope you've enjoyed it.
I have.
You've been listening to Mostly Locally here on Waiheke Radio. I'm your host, Andy, and this has been a great show with Elska Sana, talking all things everything, really. And we're going to go out now with one of her tracks that she selected, The Boxer by Simon and Garfunkel. It's such a cool classic 70s track that probably doesn't need any reason why you want to play it, because it's just good.
Yeah. Yep.
Here it is.